face darkened, and his leku dipped to communicate anger.
"It's everyone's fight," he said. "We just happen to be the only two here."
"You sound like a bad hollow." Lannery smiled and opened the hatch. Hand on sword hilt, force senses fogged by the storms that raged across Typhon's surface, she stepped down onto her home planet one more time. They split up as they approached the crashed Stargazer ship, and Lannery's nervousness grew. She did not want to find her brother dead among the wreckage. Whether that said she was a good person, whether it spoke of an unreasonable sense of forgiveness, she did not know. It simply was. She had always held out hope for him. Even as he turned that blaster on her, and she had a split second to partially shield herself with the Force, she had felt so sorry for him. A fool, perhaps, but a sister for sure. She hoped her parents would be proud. Lannery closed on the ship and probed outward with her Force senses. She could not detect anyone inside at all. Tree approached slowly from the other side, and when he hefted a rock and threw it at the hull, she ran forward to tackle anyone who emerged. But all was silent. She climbed the tilted hull and shone a glow rod through a smashed door. The insides were a mess. Crushed paneling, hanging wires and cables, a tumbled seat, and hardened impact foam formed around the empty shapes of at least four people. She could see two bodies still encased in foam, and the parts exposed were badly mutilated by the crash. Lannery signaled for Tree to wait where he was, then climbed inside. Neither body was Dale's. She breathed a sigh of relief, then jumped at a particularly strong crash of lightning from outside. There was no sign of the device, and no evidence of a battle or being shot down. The Force Storm had downed this ship, and she wondered at the stroke of luck. She touched the hull on the way out, then slid down the ship's back to the engine cowls. They were still almost too hot to touch. 30 kilometers to the old city, and they're on foot, she shouted.
How long ago?
Tree asked. Not long. Still hot. But we need to hurry. They ran back to the Peacemaker, and Lannery took off and drifted them quickly across the landscape. Tree sat beside her and kept his eye on the scanners as she steered them through valleys and around rocky summits. She was more than aware of the element of surprise they had on their side once again. Dale thought she was dead. Approaching the old city, she experienced flashbacks of the last time she had been here. After finding Dale's bloodied clothing and believing him dead, she had returned to Anil Kesh to face the repercussions of his final acts. Following the inquest into Scott Yoon's murder, for which blame was laid squarely on Dale, she had been granted a period of leave, during which she had traveled home and told her parents everything that had happened. They had blamed themselves, and Lannery had blamed herself. A distance had grown between them, and when the time came to embark upon the rest of her great journey, alone this time, a situation she would grow to prefer, she had grabbed at it. She had never returned to the old city. Dale was dead and gone. Something had taken him down, and there was nothing to be gained from visiting that place again. Besides, there was the sense of fear that had flooded her, which she had attributed to the immense age of the place, the unknown history, the mystery that even the Force could not enlighten. She had never spoken of it. She believed that place should always be left alone. And now, here she was again. "Sensors don't show any life forms," she said.
"No Jedi here? Surely they'd be guarding against him getting past you."
"I think Master Dan Powell said they withdrew." She pointed up at the sky. "There's something else going on. Connected or not, I think we're on our own."
"You Jedi and your mysteries," Tree said, leku shrugging. "So where are they?"
"They must have gone down already."
"Down?"
"There are tunnels beneath the ruins. Caverns, lakes, deep places."
"I've had enough of the underground."
Lannery looked at him, one eyebrow raised, although this time she did not say, "You don't have to come."
"Let's make it quick," Tree said.
"You're feeling better?"
"Your drugs are keeping it at bay."
Lannery landed the ship, and together they approached the old city. The landscape seemed over-familiar, though she had been here only once, almost as if she had always wished to return. She led them through a shallow valley and past a hill that might once have been a pyramid. They followed the footprints of four people in the long, damp grass. Her heart was beating fast, and a sense of impending dread crushed in around her. They really believe they're here to start a hypergate, she thought, and the idea was staggering. If everything went wrong, they might doom the system. But if the hypergate was real, and the device actually worked, Deo might be building a step to the stars. What explorer could not feel a thrill of excitement at that? At last, they stood close to an entrance to the old city's underground, and Lannery recognized it as the way she had come before. A sense of déjà vu struck home, hard, and much that had happened since that first fated descent felt like a dream.
I don't like this place,
Tree said, snapping her back to reality.
Feels
strange, she said. I sense that everything is about to change, Master Dan Powell had said. Once again, Lannery pursued her brother beneath Tython's surface, not knowing what might lie beneath. Not long after descending from the light, they came across the first of Dan Powell's safeguards. The Cathar Stargazer woman had been sliced into several parts. Her head had rolled down a slight slope and now rested, staring up at them. The rest of her lay scattered across the tunnel floor. The blood was still wet and warm, its smell sickening. Her eyes reflected Lannery's glowrod light accusingly, and Lannery sensed the force about the trap that had been sprung here. Set into the wall was a series of laser pods, all of them expended now. But they had fulfilled their purpose. Only Dale and two others left, Lannery said.
And now they know there are traps.
I doubt they'll fall for the next one.
Let's hope we don't,
Tree said. These are set by my people, Lannery said.
Then there must be something down here worth protecting.
Lannery did not reply, because she had thought the same. The Jedi Council had charged her with stopping her brother, and they had surely assumed that she would have succeeded long before now. This was the final step in his plan, and still he was ahead of her. But they would not have guessed that. These traps were here to prevent anyone from entering the deeps of the old city, and they had been placed recently. They continued their descent. Lannery probed ahead, her senses less befuddled down here. Perhaps the force storm on the surface was calming, or maybe the solid bulk of Tython between her and the storm acted as a shield. The force felt disturbed but settled. She used it with confidence, and the next trap was obvious. Dale and the others had also been aware of it. They had filled a robe with rocks and thrown it ahead, and the shredded material and cracked rocks bore the scorch marks of spent laser pods. They're moving quickly, Lannery said.
How can you tell?
That's my brother. Lannery drew her sword as they moved on. She recognized some of the caverns and tunnels, the large, stepped descents, and the strange engravings on some of the walls, but she kept focused. The pursuit. The Jedi safeguards. They were all that mattered. If it existed, she had no idea how far down the hypergate might be. As they crossed a hallway with carved stone pillars and plinths bearing strange, time-worn sculptures, she saw a flash in the distance. It illuminated a high arched doorway for a moment before fading, then came again. The white-hot scorch of a laser blast.
Another trap triggered,
Tree said, and Lannery nodded. They were close. She ran. Perhaps expectation smothered caution. The chase was almost at an end, and her determination to face Dale again before he triggered the device was a hot, driving thing. She probed with her force senses, detected nothing amiss, and trusted that. She did not take into account that her senses were obscured, and that the force was once again shivering at the storms above. Whatever the reason, she led the way into danger. The laser trap had been set across a wide tunnel, and smoke was still rising from the heavy object that had been used to spring it. The rock had been neatly sliced in two, severed parts glowing. They can't be more than 100 steps ahead, she thought, and as she concentrated on running quietly, shielding her mind and readying herself for what was to come, she saw a flurry of movement on her left. Lannery! Tree shouted behind her, and he pushed her forward. Maybe he tripped, shoving her as he fell. Or perhaps he did so on purpose. The hail of blaster fire echoed across the tunnel, smashing rock to molten pellets, and the Stargazer had fired 5 times before Lannery raised her sword. She deflected 2 more shots and leaped across the tunnel with barely any effort. She landed beside the man and swung the sword, severing both of his arms just below the elbows. Forearms and blaster fell to the ground. The man gasped quietly and took 2 steps back until he was standing against the tunnel wall. He looked down at his gouting stumps, then up at Lannery, eyes wide. She swung her sword through his chest, cutting him almost in two. As he dropped dead, she turned around, ready to encourage Tree onward and tell him to be careful, because now Dale and the last Stargazer knew they were close on their tail. But Tree did not need telling, because he was dead. 1 blast had struck him high on the side of his neck, scorching across the back of his skull. He had fallen onto his front, arms still outstretched.
Oh, Tree,
Lannery whispered, because she didn't know what else to say. She dashed to his side, ready to snatch up his blaster and run on. A bubble of blood formed at his nose. She touched his hand, his wrist, and felt a weak pulse fluttering like a bird in a trap. The wound looked bad, yet he still breathed. But Lannery knew there was no time. I'm sorry, she said, and she left Tree in the dark and ran on. Her only comfort was in knowing that, were he conscious, he would understand. As she had been that first time in the depths of the old city, she was now alone. Soon, Dale was alone as well. Careful now, more attuned than ever to the ebb and flow of the Force through these ancient subterranean rooms, Lannery sensed the last Stargazer long before he knew she was there. He was hiding on a high step that led up 1 massive wall, blaster aimed back the way he and Dale had come. Lannery climbed higher. She moved quickly and quietly, barely even disturbing the air around her, and every moment she watched for the movement that would show that he had heard or seen her. But she was a shadow. When she was high enough, she moved forward and dropped on the Stargazer from above. She thought of questioning him about where Dale had gone and how he was armed, but she could not take the chance. She'd seen one of these Stargazers explode suicide belts without a second thought. And, she supposed, there was also anger behind the swing of her sword. The Stargazer's head bounced down 3 large steps, and she landed softly on the ground just as it settled beside her. She was already running again. Dale might not know that the last Stargazer was dead, but he would assume that he was on his own now. Him, and the sister he had shot and left for dead.
Dale! Lannery shouted, surprising even herself.
She paused, then smiled. It felt good to call his name. And not because he was her brother and she still held out any hope for him, because, at last, she did not. No more hope. She enjoyed calling his name because in her voice, she could hear the anger and disgust she was feeling. So many people he had killed to fuel his fantasy. Even his sister. If their parents were to suddenly appear, he would kill them as well.
Dale! I'm coming to stop you now! No pleading! No more chances! Just you and me! And last time down here, you spilled your own blood!
Her voice echoed away, filling huge rooms and grand tunnels that might never have heard such language before. She wondered at the Gree tongue, and what these places had seen and heard so long ago. She felt the heavy, dense power that filled the place, and did not care. She was tired and enraged. Her balance was unsettled, but she let the anger drive her on. It sharpened her senses. Deeper, and her glow rod fought harder against the darkness than ever before. Perhaps the farther down she went, the heavier the dark. And then Dale was there, standing in a room that might once have been a bathing place. He'd thrown several glow rods in a rough circle around him, and resting by his feet was the device. He must have been carrying it on his own, and Lannery was amazed that something so powerful did not bear more weight.
"I think this is far enough," Dale said.
"I'm not stopping now," Lannery said. She slowed, but kept walking toward Dale.
"I don't mean you. I mean this, here. It's far enough."
"Here?" She looked around. "But where is the..." Dale bent down to touch the device.
"Don't!"
She drew a blaster and aimed it at Dale's head, sheathing her sword. And she knew without any doubt that it would take nothing for her now to pull the trigger.
"Not a very graceful weapon for a Jedi."
"You stole my sword."
"Looks like you have another. And you're not afraid to get it bloody."
"This one isn't special."
"Oh, right. Yeah, I dumped that other one in deep space."
He was still half-crouched, fingers splayed, and she watched his other hand. "I should shoot him right now."
"Come with me," Dale said.
"You shot me."
"And yet you're here. My tough sister."
"The Force saved me. Ironic, don't you think? You mock it so much, and yet it'll be your undoing."
"It looks like a blaster will be my undoing."
They stood that way for a while. Lannery did not relax for a moment. Her finger on the trigger, her eyes on Dale, her Force senses ranging and yet never quite fully aware. The storm was abating, but the Force on Tython was still stirred. "You're a bad man, Dale."
"I'm fighting for what I believe in."
"That doesn't mean you're not evil."
"I won't stop," he said. "I won't give this up, Lannery. Not after so long. Can't you feel it? Can't you sense it? You have no idea."
"I don't care," she said. Dale stared at her. The older, madder Dale she still did not know.
"Can't you just wonder?" he asked softly. "Aren't you at least curious about what might be out there?"
She did not reply.
"Where we came from," he said. "Our origins, our birth planets, places where we belong but which we were torn away from. Our heritage in the stars, Lannery. Doesn't even a small part of you wonder?"
"Yes," Lannery said after a brief pause. "But not at the risk of everything I know and love."
"Then shoot me."
He reached lower. Lannery's finger tightened on the trigger and eased again. Instead, she closed her eyes and took the greatest risk of her life. She pushed a memory of them together, pushed it with all her might. The Force left her with a clap, and for a while she was actually alive in the memory as it formed in Dale's mind, as real there as she was in this ancient subterranean bathing place for the Gree. They walked together beside the river back at Bodhi Temple, young, almost carefree, watching the weave birds nesting in the trees and the river water carrying clumps of roundweed as large as small islands. The young Lannery laughs in delight and sees Dale do the same. His eyes are wide with surprise. For that moment, he is back there with her. And Lannery saw her brother's eyes grow wide and wet where he hunched over the device, and she thought, "Now!" She shoved again, but this was no mere memory. She gathered every flaming, blazing, wretched image she had witnessed over the past days. The explosions and death across Greenwood Station, the mines deep on Sunspot, those who had died beneath her sword, the violent conflagration in the skies of Tython, and heaved them at Dale. His mind recoiled, and for an instant his face was a child's, displaying shock and anger at her deception. Then her brother began to scream. He staggered back, crying at the wretchedness, the pain, the suffering she had pushed his way. Lannery force-shoved him back. He stumbled, then tripped over his feet and went down. She moved beside the device, blaster clasped in one hand. I stopped him, she thought, and a great weight vanished from the depths of her chest. She pressed her hand there and felt the heat of her healed wound. Dale's scream lessened. He stood, shaking his head, rubbing at his face and running fingers through his hair. His breathing remained labored, each inhalation shuddering. Defeated, she expected him to run. And she would have let him. He'd have lost himself down there and died. Or maybe he'd have gone farther than Osamael Or and disappeared into the old city forever. But he did not run. And when he looked up, she saw a completely different expression on his face. Rage. Stay out of my head! He roared, and he came at her. Lannery raised the blaster, but Dale somehow was quicker. His hand flashed out. She saw something flitting through the air between them, and then a cool pain erupted in her hand. She dropped the blaster and staggered back, looking at the slim metal blade stuck through her palm and slicing the heel of her hand in two. Then Dale was on her, and every second of attention he had paid at Stav Kesh came to the fore. Startled, Lannery failed to deflect the first punches and kicks. Dale's skills had always been in combat, and she reeled from the blows he rained down on her. She held her wounded hand to her side, but he aimed for it, one kick catching the blade and slicing deeper, a punch pressing her hand back against her hip and snagging the blade's end on her clothing. Lannery cried out in pain. Dale grinned. He came at her again, but this time she had recovered enough to be ready. As Dale fought with every martial talent and all the strength he had, so Lannery drew on her training, her years as a ranger, her closeness with the Force. Everything Dale hated, and she used it all against him. A punch caught Lannery across the shoulder, and she shoved with her uninjured hand, force-punching him across the cavern. He struck a column and slid down, struggling to stand again. Lannery snatched up the blaster and did not hesitate to pull the trigger. Nothing happened. The dropped blaster must have been damaged. Dale crouched, picked up a rock, and threw it. Lannery deflected it with the Force, and it shattered into dust. Dale drew two short knives from his belt and attacked once again. Lannery dropped the useless blaster and drew her sword, parrying his knife thrusts. She held the blade one-handed, but even then she knew she had the better of him. She almost felt sorry. Then he threw a knife at her face, and as she force-shoved it to one side, he leaped at the device. Lannery had no time to think, and if she had, she would have done the same. She swung the sword in a high arc, up over her head, down toward where Dale would meet the device. She closed her eyes at the last moment and felt the sickeningly familiar sensation of sword parting flesh. Something moved and hit the ground, and Lannery had to look. Dale's right arm lay severed beside the device, fingers still splayed. The blade was buried deep in the side of his head. He slumped down, moving slightly, eyelids flickering. He looked at Lannery, his body seeming to relax, and for the first time since childhood, she truly saw the Dale that had once been. But he no longer knew himself. Dale's eyes flooded red. Blood ran from his ears and nose. And then he was still. The sudden inaction and stillness came as a shock, and Lannery let out one heavy, startled sob of relief and sorrow. She probed out gently, expecting to feel rage and hate, his familiar anger at her touching him with the Force, and his determination to complete what he had begun. But there was no more Dale. Her brother was gone, and all that was left was this sad, broken body. She turned her back on Dale while she made sure the device was stable. She thought so. She also thought that the strange power she'd sensed down here 9 years before existed now as something like a held breath, matching the shattering potential of the device. The darkness at its heart was horrible. But she was not the one to deal with it. She had left the sword with Dale. It was not her real sword. And she had no wish to wipe her brother's blood from its blade. Soon, she would carry the device back to the surface and into the Peacemaker. And if Tree still lived, she would do what she could for him. Poor, brave Tree. She would transport them both to Anil Kesh, the Temple of Science. More talented Jedi than she would examine and make safe the device, and better healers would give Tree their full attention. She would demand that of them. She would insist. After that, she would meet the Jedi Masters who had set her on this mission. She would tell them everything that had happened and request permission to recover Dale's body so that she could take him home. She had decided that she would tell her parents everything. After all that, there was one more journey to take and some final questions to ask. Temple Master Law Mi would grant everything she asked because she might have prevented a cataclysm. What she would not tell the Jedi Masters, ever, was just how long she sat there next to her brother's cooling body, staring at his device's activation panel. Wondering. Only wondering. Chapter 19. Might.
I can never tell anyone what I saw in the depths of the old city. There are no words, but I hope one day I can show them.
Dalian Brock, Diaries, 10,661 TYA, Thoyor Arrival. In the end, she decided her parents could wait. That was a reunion she dreaded, and not only because she had killed her own brother. She dreaded it most because she had failed to save him a second time. Storms still raged across Tython as she coaxed her damaged Peacemaker down onto one of Anil Kesh's landing pads. The ship needed repairs, and her droid required some special attention from those expert in such technologies. Most of all, Tree was balancing between life and death. She had done her best for him, but her brief ministrations might have been worthless. He needed the attention of someone experienced in force healing. She had spoken to him every moment of their brief flight to Anil Kesh, and though he was in a deep coma, she hoped it had done some good. It certainly made her feel better, no longer talking to herself. But Lannery's dark matters were not yet over. And even though her mission was all but completed, she sensed something greater occurring on Tython. Master Dan Powell met her on the landing pad, hood raised against the rain. Lannery, Dan Powell said with genuine affection. Lannery went to kneel, but Dan Powell pulled her into an embrace. She submitted to it and rested her head on the shorter master's shoulder.
Your balance is unsettled, Dan Powell whispered.
Yes, master. I killed my brother. Dan Powell sighed heavily.
These are dark times. Please, come with me so that we can talk. We'll eat and drink.
I'll welcome the company. I'm acting Temple Master here in Master Quan Zhang's absence.
Where is he?
Away. Now come. Dan Powell held out her hand.
Tell me everything, and then I have plenty to tell you.
I thought it was over, Lannery said, looking up at the skies to the east. Lightning danced there, and powerful winds swept stinging rain across Anil Kesh's exposed surfaces. Beneath the temple, the chasm roared. Darkness seemed to rise from there, though it was almost midday. Even after everything Lannery had seen and done, it made her shiver.
Your mission is over, Dan Powell said.
Together, they watched three Jedi Rangers who were carefully carrying the device from the Peacemaker, place it on a stable trolley, and wheel it toward an open door. It was destined for one of Anil Kesh's laboratories. Lannery only hoped that the Jedi could learn from it. But a greater story is beginning. Master Dan Powell told Lannery of the alien ship that had entered the system exploded above Typhon, and then crashed somewhere near the rift. Perhaps in the abyss of Rue itself. Its arrival had caused the dreadful force storms that still rippled across the planet, and the Jedi were unsettled. Master Quanzhang is one of many seeking news of the crashed ship, Dan Powell said. I fear it means changing times for Typhon. Fear? Lannery asked. There was a disturbance in the Force before the ship crashed. A wave of darkness. A terrible voice of pain. And then silence as death fell. I sensed that also, Lannery said. On my way from Sunspot. Many Jedi did, Dan Powell said. Those on the ship were Force sensitives. From out of system? We believe so. Dan Powell nodded gently but said no more. She could sense Lannery's need to talk. So now, your story, she said. They sat in Master Dan Powell's laboratory, and Lannery told her everything. Bad things, Dan Powell said when the story was almost over. Such bad things. I hope Trisona can be saved. He's a strange man, Lannery said. She was surprised to find herself smiling. So hard when I met him. Harsh, selfish. He had troublesome views, and he even told me some of the things he'd done. Not the worst things, I'm sure. But he was very open about his past. Some would have called him wicked or even evil. But he helped me several times, and I saw the better man inside. I sensed that also, Dan Powell said. That's why I chose him to be my ears and eyes. You really promised him what he said? I did, she said softly. If he survives, I'll keep my word. He came for me on Sunspot, saved me. And I think he was willing to sacrifice himself to save my life again down in the old city. He knew what was at stake. If he hadn't put himself in the way of that laser blast, I might have died. Your alchemical skills are quite remarkable. Only what you taught me, Master. No. What you did cannot be taught, Lannery. You're a natural. Just be careful when you continue your experiments. I'm not sure I will continue, Lannery said. Oh, you will. Dan Powell smiled, but it quickly faded. But what you did, the dark tempts you. It teases with the power it could give. And killing your brother has pushed you that way also. You feel conflicted. You feel confused. Yes, Master. Brush aside the confusion, Dan Powell said. That is the first step to confronting any imbalance. Know that you are troubled, or be comfortable that you are not. Be honest with yourself. And I am here, Lannery. We are all here to help. Every single master, because, she shrugged, it could be you saved us all. I feel that my balance has swayed, Master. But I have not fallen, and I will not. Dan Powell raised an eyebrow, took a drink, delicately wiped her mouth. So, the threat is quashed, and another rises in its place. You'll be wanting to rest before your journey back to Bodhi and your parents. No, Lannery said. I'm not going home just yet. And rest will wait. I still have questions. Oh, Master Dan Powell said, but she knew very well that Lannery had more to ask. The Hypergate. I felt it. You felt something in the old city, as anyone particularly talented in the Force will. Just as the chasm causes disturbance, and the Abyss of Rue, and other places on Typhon. Your brother was right in one regard, at least. This is not our planet. But I felt such power, like something waiting. The wine's finished. I need to fetch another bottle. Dan Powell stood and went to turn away. Lannery grasped her robe and pulled her back around so that they were face to face. It was an audacious move, handling a master like this. But Lannery felt justified. Master, is there a hypergate down there? Dan Powell looked down at Lannery's hand on her sleeve, waiting until it was released. Whether there is or isn't, whether anyone knows for sure or not, doesn't change what you did, Lannery. If that greed device had been turned on, well, we might not be here now. Friends, with wine. The whole system might not be here anymore. Might, Lannery said. Civilization is built on the word. Dan Powell smiled. You serve the Jedi well, Lannery. You remember when you and your brother first came to Onil Kesh? I saw the potential in you then. And when you returned to complete your training after you thought he had died, and we spent long days together here, in this laboratory. She gestured around at dark corners and flickering candles. That's when I knew for sure you would one day be a great Jedi. I was not afraid to tell you so. And today, I'm not afraid to claim an element of pride, because I was right. You are a great Jedi. And on your journey, you might need to learn when to confront things, and when to turn away. When to obey your masters, and when not. She shrugged. That word might again. It means perhaps, and it also means strength. Maybe it's doubt that gives true strength, eh, Lannery? Balance is easy. Shifting from balance and finding it again means you have to be stronger than most. And I have every confidence in you. The Jedi Master turned away again and walked across the laboratory, past benches where she and Lannery had practiced alchemies and manipulation. As she returned with a new bottle of wine, Lannery had one more question to ask. Master, where did the information about Dale, the Stargazers, and their device come from? Dan Powell nodded as if affirming something to herself. It's Kalimar you need to visit. Yes, Lannery said. Kalimar. She held up her glass for one more drink. On her way to Kalimar, Lannery had time to reflect on what she had done. Your balance is unsettled, Master Dan Powell had said, and Lannery could not disagree with the Master. Darkness haunted her dreams, and sometimes she found herself dreaming of Bogan. All that troubled her, yet this journey was not yet done. When it was over, soon, she was confident that she was strong enough to correct the unbalance herself. She was surprised to find herself lonely. Ironholgs remained at Onil Kesh, being repaired by a young journeyer whose talent was mechanics. And without Tree here, her cabin felt too large, her ship too silent. She spoke to herself again, but was sad that there was no reply. Tree's prognosis was good, she had been told. She held on to the delight she felt at this fact. She thought perhaps she had made a friend. A group of journeyers led by Master Kinnaid had searched for Dale's body for some time, but it was never found. Creatures, Lannery thought. There could be anything down there. There are depths. She sat staring at her experiment for some time. It was shriveled and denuded, and it should have been blasted into space. Yet she could not rid herself of it. Darkness danced around the petrified flesh, and Lannery tried several times to find life still within it. At first it was simply dead. But then, half a day out from Kalimar, her force senses perceived a speck of flesh that pulsed with life once more. Given time, she would relearn the alchemy of flesh. Its draw was too great to ignore. And she was strong. On Kalimar, there was nothing to find. Kara's high apartment was abandoned. The damage caused by the battle she and Tree had fought with the fat woman's sentry droids had been repaired. The secret room Lannery had discovered was clean and empty, now opened up as part of the apartment. Everything personal was gone. Kara had left her apartments for the first time in 13 years, and they should have been desirable real estate. And yet no one had chosen to rent it. There was something dark about that space. Any inquiries she made as to Kara's location were met with a blank wall. Most claimed not to have heard of her. The several times Lannery used a subtle force trick to read her associates' minds, she found confused images of Kara as friend and threat, but no indication of where she was now. They had all known her, and they were lying about that. But when it came to her whereabouts, they told the truth. Kara had vanished. With her, so the militia Captain Loris told Lannery, had gone several other high-profile members of the Rahol Yon community. One day they were there, the next, not. Their homes were abandoned, sometimes still filled with personal possessions. Their business interests were left without directors. There was never any trace. Maybe you're better off without them, Lannery suggested.
And why would you say that?
Loris asked her. Because they weren't what they seemed. They were darker. They had their sights elsewhere, and when it suited them, they fed information to the Jedi. Brought me here. Made my brother and his cronies speed up their plans. I think perhaps Kara and her like are the real stargazers. She left Kalamar the same day that she arrived, sensing that Loris was glad to see her go. And she was glad to leave. She thought of Ironholgs being repaired. There were the machines, and there were the masters. The tools that function and react, and the programmers who use them for their own ends. She suspected that Dale had been a machine, a tool, and that Kara and her missing comrades were the real masters. Perhaps Dale had been moving too slowly with his schemes, and his masters had wanted to encourage him to speed up. And what better way than to set the Jedi on his trail? Lannery did not like the feeling of being used, and yet it was something that haunted her. But now Tython was her destination once more. Her parents awaited, and it was time for their daughter to come home. After the second remembrance service for Dale, she would stay for a while. She would wander the grassy plains around Bodhi Temple alone, perhaps swim in the river, and watch the weave birds making nests. And when darkness fell, she would lie back and contemplate Ashlaw and Bogan, and her place of balance between them. This is January Lavoie. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, Dawn of the Jedi, Into the Void, by Tim Lebon. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Aaron Blank. Star Wars, Dawn of the Jedi, Into the Void, is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2013. All rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production Copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House Audio presentation. All rights reserved. And now, Eruption by John Ostrander. Hawk Ryo drifted in and out the shadows, a shadow himself. The moon world Zarist was located far from the sun, and most of the available light was reflected off the gas giant Obri, around which the moon orbited. Kanan was typically bustling with activity, but the workers' town was now deserted. Like all the surface towns on Zarist, Kanan was located near an active volcano for its much-needed warmth, despite the risk of occasional eruptions. The authorities usually predicted the eruptions in time and evacuated the threatened areas, just as they had recently done with Kanan. No one was left in the town except Hawk. In theory. In reality, the Jedi Ranger spotted two figures atop the flat-roofed building less than a kilometer away. Only 5 stories high, it was still the tallest building in the area. They were Twi'leks, like himself, and armed. Hawk opened his comm and called his partner. Her surroundings, Lannery Brock decided, were beautiful. Underground seas flowed through large caverns, smoothed with high vaulted ceilings, and natural minerals gave off enough light to create a twilight effect. It was no wonder the rich of Zarist chose to live in the warm caverns rather than the cold surface of the moon. It was calm on this island, lending itself to meditation. Peaceful. The negotiations were not. The management of Desane Mining and the manual laborers were now simply shouting at one another. Ill will was building. Lannery was finding it difficult to maintain balance between the light and the dark sides of the Force, as she was taught. Management consisted entirely of the extended Desane family, which was headed by Eomin Desane, the tall, pale, patrician head of the clan. The workers, both human and alien, were led by short, weather-beaten Arco Santis, and demanded a voice in how the company was run. They left Zarist to labor at the gas mining operations floating above Obri. The pay was steady, if not generous, but it was a hard life. For their part, the Desanes were loath to cede control to anyone who was not family. The solution, it was decided, would be a marriage between Brahm Santis, Arco's oldest son, and Oma Desane, Eomin's youngest daughter. Brahm would become part of the Desane family and a voice for the workers. Lannery had gotten stuck with the role of negotiator, and though it wasn't the solution she would have suggested, if it satisfied all parties concerned, then it satisfied her. That was before Oma Desane vanished. Each side blamed the other for her disappearance. Work at Desane Mining had ground to a halt. Tempers flared, and open-class warfare looked not only possible, but likely. Lannery and Hawk had been sent by the Jedi Council on Tython to prevent violence and find the girl. Lannery's comm buzzed. The ranger swung her long legs out of the chair, turning away from all the shouting. "Please tell me you found the girl."
"I may have found her," Hawk replied. "I went to the spaceport to check who arrived or left around the time of the kidnapping. I discovered a Shikokwan ship, registered to Baron Volnos Ryo."
"Your brother?"
"My brother, the crime lord."
Lannery could picture Hawk's lips twisting in distaste.
"He owns interests in the mining operations on Obri's two other moons, but he's never been able to get a foothold with the Desanes. One of the ways to increase the value of his own holdings is to decrease the value of his rival's holdings. Are you growling?"
"Maybe. Will Oma still be alive?"
"Her body hasn't been found, so it's likely. If they intend to kill her, it'll be when the two sides are at each other's throats."
"Which will be soon."
"You have to keep them from reaching the boiling point. I think I've spotted where Oma is being held, but you can't say anything until I know for sure. I'll let you know what I find. Keep the workers and management from killing each other."
"Right. You get the easy job."
"The Force go with you."
Lannery turned back to the round wooden table and narrowed her gray eyes. Both sides were already at the breaking point. Violence was ready to erupt. But Lannery had a theory. Sometimes the best way to cut off violence was to use it first. Her right hand dropped to the slug thrower at her hip. She didn't often carry one, didn't need it most times, but something told her to wear one today. If there's one thing Lannery learned through her experience, it was to listen to her instincts. With one fluid move, she aimed the slug thrower straight up over her head and fired three bursts into the ceiling. The arguing stopped dead, and all eyes went to the auburn-haired ranger. Jedi were mysterious beings to most of the sentients of the settled worlds. They went where they willed and intervened where they chose, or, they claimed, as the Force directed. They had strange powers and were both respected and feared. Right now, Lannery was feared. Good. That meant she had their attention. The slug thrower still in her hand, the Jedi ranger sat back in her chair, placing the weapon on the table before her, the barrel pointed at the now silent delegation. She spoke quietly. "The last time I was a negotiator was on Skalgora. Before I was done, forests were ablaze, and one of the parties was dead." She leaned forward. "I was hoping these negotiations would go smoother." In truth, the deaths and the burning forests on Skalgora haunted Lannery. The negotiators here on Zarist, however,
didn't need to know that.
Perhaps we should begin again, she suggested in a low murmur.
They did, quietly, and with nervous glances in her direction. Certain he hadn't been seen by anyone, Hawk reached the side of the five-story building and glanced upward. One guard was directly above him, and the other would be across the roof. It was vital that he silence both before they could give alarm, assuming the girl was alive. The ranger brought his sword out of its sheath without a whisper, holding it in his right hand as he let the balance within him slip into the dark side. Hawk knew the dark side well. He dwelled too deeply in it once, and it got him sent to Bogan, a moon of Tython where those who drifted too far to the dark side were sent by the Jedi Council for solitary reflection and meditation until they returned to the balance. Right now, he needed to use aggression, however, which meant channeling the dark side. He eased into it with a comfortable familiarity, while he crouched and then leaped straight upward, letting the Force carry him. Hawk cleared the edge of the roof, right in front of the very surprised Twi'lek guard, and without hesitation slashed his sword across the guard's neck. He died silently. The other guard sensed something amiss and started to turn. Hawk gestured with the Force and pulled him across the roof. The guard gasped for a moment before being impaled on the ranger's sword. Their eyes met, and Hawk recognized him. Dion A'Arla, one of his brother's personal guards. A'Arla's eyes registered recognition as well, and then life faded from them. Hawk felt his death in the Force, and part of him, the part that fed on the dark side, felt deep satisfaction. The ranger let the body slide off his sword and took a deep breath, centering himself again in the balance. It was tempting for Hawk to just stay in the dark side as he had once before. It was seductive, but dangerous. Hawk found a stairway in the middle of the roof leading down into the building and descended cautiously. Two floors down were two large rooms on either side of the stairwell, the doors left wide open in the haste of the evacuation. At first blush, they appeared to have been used as dormitories for workers that were unmarried. Cots were overthrown, and debris littered the floor. Hugging the stairway wall, Hawk glanced through the doorway and found Oma. The girl was bound and gagged on a cot next to the wall opposite the door. A large and surly-looking Twi'lek stood guard, a slug-thrower at the ready, but he was looking at the far end of the room. Focusing his senses through the Force, the Jedi heard two more Twi'leks at the other end of the dormitory. Neither sounded happy.
"Thought this would be over by now. You got other things to do?" "Other than sit next to a Sokar volcano, yes. The problem is that Jedi sitting at the table. Not for long, though. Our contact will take care of her. Then we off the girl, leave the corpse where it can be found, and get gone."
Hawk couldn't risk calming a warning to Lannery. His best bet was to settle things here and hope his fellow ranger was still alive. However, the moment he made a move, the two guards at the end of the room would see him, and the guard closest to Oma would certainly kill her. He needed a diversion. The volcano provided a spectacular one. Ahead of schedule, the eruption started with a clap of thunder as plumes of pumice, flaming ash, and molten lava were belched into the air. Everyone was stunned for a moment, but then Hawk Ryo moved. His sword in his right hand and a long knife in his left, he swept into the room. Hurling the knife toward the guard standing next to Oma, he guided it with the Force into the Twi'lek's neck. The guard's finger tightened on the trigger of his slug thrower as he dropped. The shot went wild, but was audible even over the roaring volcano. Hawk pivoted toward the two other guards and sped toward them as they turned to the source of the slug fire and spotted him. A moment for their reaction, a few steps for Hawk. A moment as they brought their slug throwers around, another few steps. They aimed their weapons. Hawk threw himself into a forward roll beneath their shots and pushed off of one leg as he came forward and up. Flipping in midair over the guards, the Jedi shoved his boot down hard into the upturned face of the one to his right. Nosebone and cartilage cracked as the Twi'lek fell backward. The Jedi landed, spun, and thrust his sword into the fallen Twi'lek's chest. A quick and clean kill.
His partner kept firing, but always where the Jedi had been. Hawk landed in a crouch and, with a gesture of his hand, delivered a force blow that sent his target backwards through the window. The Twi'lek's scream was covered by the volcano's roar. Hawk preferred not to kill when he had the option, but there was no time, and no other choice. Still, the dark part in him exulted, and he struggled to bring himself back to the balance. Hawk squatted next to Oma.
I'm Jedi Ranger Hawk Ryo, and I've been sent here to rescue you. Try to be calm.
Picking the teen up, Hawk threw her over one shoulder and raced back up to the roof. Superheated volcanic debris rained down on the town, the wooden buildings starting to catch fire. Hawk again tried to warn Lannery, but the ash jammed the comm's signal. It was hard to see through the ash, and the Ranger tightened his grip on Oma. Calling on the Force once more, he leaped to the next nearest roof, ran across, and then jumped to the next roof after that. He could barely breathe, and was jumping blind, but he hoped he could trust in the Force that he was taking them out of danger, and that Lannery was not dead. Ranger Brock eased back into her chair. The discussions were still going nowhere, but at least everyone was civil. A servant brought her a goblet of wine, a Vaisamond red, something she had developed a taste for on Skogora. Lannery raised the goblet to her lips and paused. She knew the bouquet of the wine, and something bitter underlay the aroma. Lannery turned her head to glance at the servant who had given it to her, a nervous little man, as old as Eamon Desane. Fear came off him like a wave, a bitter aroma of its own. The servant turned to run. Lannery caught him with the Force, lifted him up, and dropped him onto the round table. Thrusting the goblet in his face, Lannery whispered, "I think this vintage is off. Please, taste it." The man's eyes went wide as he babbled incoherently. Lannery growled, "Drink it, little man, or I will make you drink it." She didn't have that ability, but it was commonly believed that the mysterious Jedi could seize your mind. That fear, that superstition, sometimes served the Jedi almost as well as the Force did. The servants certainly believed the stories.
"No! It's poisoned!"
he blurted. Lannery folded her arms, keeping her eyes on her would-be assassin. "Master Desane, you have a traitor in your midst. The kidnappers would have needed someone on the inside to reach your daughter. That traitor is this man." Eamon Desane looked at his servant, appalled.
"Batolo? All these years you have been a trusted servant, almost a member of the family. Why?"
"Because all these years I have only been a servant," Batolo said quietly. "Never a member of the family. I wanted to have something of my own before I died. A chance to leave this wretched rock."
Desane's voice seethed with fury.
"Where is my daughter, Batolo?"
"With any luck, dead, my lord."
Lannery's calm buzzed. "With any luck, my lord, she is not," she said as she activated the calm. "Hawk?"
"Lannery, someone is going..."
"Yes, I know. He tried and failed. Is Oma Desane with you?"
"She is, but we have another problem."
"What do you mean you refuse to marry Brom Santis?"
Eamon, while relieved to have his daughter back, was furious. Oma Desane stood alongside Hawk Ryo with the delegations on the island in the cavern. She, like him, was covered with ash, making her pale skin even whiter and powdering her dark hair the same hue. Free from her bonds, she stood glaring defiantly at her father. Oma's chin jutted out.
"I mean I won't marry him. No one asked me if I wanted to get married. I don't, and I won't."
"You have your duty to the family."
"I have a duty to myself. I don't know this Brom, I don't love him, and I won't marry him to settle some dispute."
This set off another round of arguing between father and daughter, with Santis pitching in.
"This is breaking down quickly," Hawk murmured.
"Actually, my sympathies are with the girl. She shouldn't be a clause in a treaty," Lannery murmured back.
"If she doesn't relent,
the negotiations will likely collapse and everything we've done will be for nothing.
I think I may have another solution, Lannery said. First, I'll need their attention.
She shot her slug thrower 3 times into the air. And again with the same effect.
Very pleasantly, Lannery spoke.
In other parts of the solar system, rival interests have a practice called fostering. I suggest you try it. Oma would become a foster child in the Santis household, and Brahm would be the same with the Desaines. Each would be treated as a full member of the family they are with. They would spend 6 months with one family and 6 months with the other. The workers would have a voice through Brahm, and Oma would learn firsthand about the workers' lives.
I think this is a very reasonable suggestion, Hawk added,
equally pleasant. But the expressions on the two Jedi firmly suggested that all sides accept the deal. Oma looked pleased. At least she wasn't getting married. Details were worked out, Hawk cleaned up, and the two Jedi met at the spaceport to take leave of Zarist and of each other.
The Council has summoned me back to Tython for a special mission, Lannery said. It's been 4 years since I've been back. It's time.
I'm heading out to Fury's Gate, replied Hawk.
It was the outermost planet in the system. Great generation ships left from the small world, seeking a path through the maze that was the core, and looking for ways back to the rest of the galaxy. The settled worlds jointly maintained a station there.
I like to look out into the stars and meditate, he said.
A small shadow passed over Lannery's face. My brother used to look out at the stars and wonder if there was a way back to the rest of the galaxy. He was never very happy on Tython, she said softly. She was quiet for a moment, then shook it off and said, It was good working with you, Ranger Ryo. I look forward to the chance to do it again.
Hawk nodded.
I do too, Ranger Brock. The Force go with you.
Lannery smiled. And you, she replied. The Jedi then crossed to their waiting ships and took off into the star-flecked skies.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.